Joining us right now to talk about the NBA is a senior NBA writer at Bleacher Report, host of the Full 48 podcast. You know he is a friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. Howard, let me start by saying that there's a lot to talk about in terms of The Last Dance and where the NBA is right now, but you and I have not spoken since the day after the league suspended the season, so bring me up to date. How are you and everybody around you in the middle of this pandemic?
Hey, Romy, great to be back with you, and hope everybody's well with you and your family. We're good, you know. Strange times here, like with everybody else, going a little bit stir-crazy here in Brooklyn with, you know, no backyard and no no nearby park or anything to go get out and exercise and stuff, so it's a little tough. I'm taking walks around the neighborhood. Also, we've had, by the way, Romy, the worst spring possibly in the history of New York. Like, every day is like 52 and rainy and gray. Like, it's been brutal. Like, dealing with all of this would be a little easier if we could at least get outside and enjoy some nice spring weather. We have had no spring to speak of, but other than that, I'm doing well, thanks.
No, I hear you. I appreciate that, Howard. You're right. The sun would help so much, just a little bit of sun. All right, so hopefully that happens soon. I want to get into some of the specifics in a moment, but overall, what kind of thoughts have you had as you've watched The Last Dance?
It's interesting, Jim. Like, I lived through, of course, the 90s Bulls, and so I'm completely familiar with the story arc and those teams, but I spent most of that as a fan. You know, I didn't start covering the NBA until 97, 98, the actual Last Dance season, and I was covering the Lakers and was fully immersed with them. I did not cover the finals that year. So I did, you know, most of what I'm seeing in this documentary is either review of things that I would have seen as a fan watching on TV like anybody else, enjoying the 90s Bulls from a distance. And then, you know, some of it, like a lot of obviously the players, like literal players, but also, you know, characters, figures in this documentary are people I've gotten to know along the way over the last 20-something years of covering the league. But, I'm really enjoying it because it is a great refresher and in some cases giving some new insight, and certainly, you know, Michael reflecting on himself and those teams and that time is always fascinating, and that's what we all signed up for, right? Like, that's why we wanted to see this, because Michael has been pretty scarce as an interview for years here post-career, and the fact that he's sitting there at all reflecting on this and that we're getting some of that old footage, you know, that's worth the price of admission. And so, you know, people can critique any number of aspects of the documentary, but they've given us a really enjoyable ride, and it's whether it's review or whether it's an education for younger fans, it's serving a great value.
Agreed. Howard Beck joining us, and really surreal. Like, the episode from last night, the two episodes from last night include the murder of his father, the decision to retire, and the decision to play baseball. I mean, Howard, all huge news at the time, but can you imagine any one, much less all three of those stories happening right now?
It would be just insane. This is something we talk about a lot. I had J.A. Adande and Ramona Shelburne on my podcast last week, and this is something that we kind of veered into at one point ourselves, which is, you know, we all covered the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, which we have all talked about. My God, could you imagine all the drama with these guys if it was during the Twitter era? And then it's just a hundredfold if we're talking about the 90s Bulls. Because I think partially because it was just a longer era and there was just that much more stuff going on. Rodman alone would have kept, you know, Twitter, Instagram and everything else going for hours on end. It would have been nonstop. I'm glad that all this didn't exist then. Like, I think it's to a degree, it makes these things less enjoyable because we obsess about it, because we overanalyze, because everything going minute to minute feels like we're constantly immersed in it, and you can't just marinate on any particular issue or flare-up, and everything feels like it's World War III. So I'm glad the Bulls did not have to deal with that. I'm glad that I didn't have to deal with it during the Shaq and Kobe era. I think I would have lost my mind. Those teams were crazy enough as it was. But, yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think of how much that team generated, those Bulls teams generated, even without the amplification of social media.
Howard Beck is joining us. So, Howard, let me ask you this. How would you explain the fact that Jordan, it was amazing the way he would think about things, approach things. Like, how would you explain the fact that he would take offense to something that people would say about him, but he would also take offense if they didn't say something to him? And sometimes he would just flat out make stuff up that people said about him.
Yeah, I mean that's part of the fun of this, Jim, right? Like that you're getting him kind of admitting some of this stuff years later, or explaining the psyche. But I also don't think it's unusual. Like the inventing of slights, or creating or making slights, you know, exaggerating them to fuel you, I think you would find among a lot more NBA players than people think. And in fact, again, I hate to always refer back to my own experience here, but Shaq did this stuff all the time. Shaq had that crazy story about David Robinson when I was in high school. I went to him for an autograph,
right,
and he refused, and that's why I want to destroy him every time. That never happened. You know, Shaq was constantly making stuff up, but he knew he had to create things. 82 games is a long season. Some guys are actually nice guys, and you don't necessarily want to destroy them. So now you've got to come up with reasons to be just vicious and relentless as a competitor. And, you know, but I love hearing all that from Jordan himself, and that he kind of cops to it. And, you know, it almost doesn't matter if these things are true or not. What matters is that it's how he fueled himself.
Howard Beck is joining us. You know, something else I thought was really curious, that part of the episode last night, Howard, where he starts to choke up when he's describing why he was the way he was and what it meant to him. And if you couldn't keep up with him, then maybe you shouldn't have been there. Like, what do you think is the image that Michael wants to portray of himself in this series?
A really good question. I don't know. I don't know if he set out, when he gave permission for this crew, for Jason Hare, the director, and then these guys to do this, I don't know, did he have a specific agenda? Like, I want to do this now because I want people to know X about me, or I want to put this part in context, or was it just a general kind of, yeah, it's just time to talk about all this? I don't know if, you know, how deep he would go. Like, I don't know Michael at all. Like, I've had almost no dealings with him because, again, I start my career covering the NBA at the same time that he's on his way out. He had a couple of years back with Washington, but I don't know him like the way Michael Wilbon and some others, Sam Smith, you know, Rick Talender, all the old guard knew him. So I can only guess, but I did find it fascinating that the end of episode 7, where he says break, where he's getting a little bit emotional, talking about his own leadership style, like that's a really fascinating moment. Why is he so emotional talking about it? I mean, he's talking about the way he treated other people. Is that a tinge of regret? Is he feeling like, yeah, I knew that this is what I had to do? And because he talks about that was the price you have to pay to play with me, and that's the price of leadership. Well, price of leadership means the price that he's paying. Is he feeling somehow regretful about how that impacted his own relationships with teammates and others around him? Does he feel like maybe I went too hard at them? I mean, I don't know. I can only guess. But I, you know, why else would he be so just emotional, just talking about it in that moment, and then need a break?
That big pour in the glass next to him. I mean, I don't know, Howard. I say that in jest, but you're right. Like, I think that he's not apologetic. I think that he's saying, this is who I am, this is the way I did it, and look at the result. But to your point, okay, then why was he so emotional? Why did he get caught up in that moment? You know, it's kind of hard for me to say because who knows how long he's been sitting there? Who knows what's going through his head? We never know in those sessions, right? I mean, they can sit there for hours on end. I really don't know, and I'm just kind of having the conversation with you right now, but why would he react like that? I don't know the answer to that, but it surprised me.
It is. And like I say, I think if you look at the words that he used, and he talks about, again, I think he said the price of leadership. Well, the price was that in his version of leadership, and again, people can debate fairly whether or not that is the right style of leadership or whether it was necessary. You know, did the ends justify the means? I mean, Michael would say so. There's other ways to win championships that don't involve berating your teammates constantly.
The Warriors, right?
Or
the Warriors.
Punching them.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe he has some second-guessing himself. He's not saying that, but I think his words and his emotions maybe betray a little bit of that.
Howard Beck is joining us. In terms of second-guessing, were you at all stunned to hear Scottie Pippen say, you know what, the way I handled that, I wish it hadn't happened, but I'd do the same thing again? What was your reaction when you saw that?
That was absolutely fascinating. I mean, to basically say those two things in the same breath, to be regretful but at the same time say I'd do it again, I don't even know I don't know what to make of that. I mean, you know, maybe it's just that for all of us, Jim, there is the perspective we get after the fact, days, months, years later, where we can say, you know, I could have done that better. But because we understand ourselves better than anybody else, we understand why it felt right in the moment. And so the only way I could kind of reconcile those things when I watched it was Scotty in that moment felt very strongly that he was standing on principle, that this was wrong, that the play should have been run for him, and that this was disrespectful, and that this was not recognizing his importance or his standing and his accomplishments. And so if in one respect it's the principle that I'm feeling very strongly about in the moment, then it still can feel right years later, because you can put yourself right back in that moment and in that mindset and feel like, yeah, this is messed up. But in the present day, still feel like, yeah, I know how much crap I then had to take after it and how much it affected not just the image of me, but his relationship with teammates, who, again, it was fascinating to hear them all be very honest about how they felt like, you know, he let them down. They felt betrayed.
I thought that was fascinating. They were not covering him last night. They did not cut him any slack. I mean, Steve Kerr, who's as measured and reasoned as anybody, said he quit on us, and it was devastating. Like, they did not cover him last night, did they?
No, and this is why it is always valuable. When people say, well, you know, we're not learning anything new. Okay, we're reviewing history. And for a lot of us who lived through it, you know, we knew all these stories, and they've been well covered, and there have been books, and there have been retrospectives of various sorts before. But because people have the safety and the ability, you know, with the benefit of time to have to reflect on this and to not have to feel as guarded, to be able to feel like, you know what, this is time to talk about it. Now I can say these things. I wasn't going to say it at the time, but yeah, he quit on us. That's the value of it, is to be able to hear guys say that bluntly on camera, and with the ability to do it because there's no consequence for being honest at this stage. So again, that's part of what still makes us vital. As long as guys are willing to be honest about this stuff, then the project is worth it.
I think that is such a good point that you make, Howard, because even Will Perdue said, look, the guy, make no mistake, the guy was an a-hole, the guy was a jerk, but looking back, he was also a great teammate in Mike, so I agree with you. He's a senior NBA writer at Bleacher Report. He is host of the Full 48 podcast, good friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. Howard, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much. We'll do it again soon. Appreciate
you. Always a pleasure, Romy. Thank you.
You too. Great job, Howard.